building up a meditation practice. A lot of it's just building up a frame of reference that you can go to frequently. You can reach frequently. So something that's accessible. And ideally, when you're looking at Dhamma practice as a whole life program, you have a frame of reference you can go to more or less in any situation. Because stuff doesn't say, oh well, I won't come in now. I'll wait till you're prepared. And you know, it just happens. So there is something you can go to pretty immediately. Why it's these frame of reference of the body is useful, and just giving the sense of confidence that, you know, just basically holding the posture of the body with clarity and awareness, that's enough. As a frame of reference, just that. But, you know, just holding the frame of reference of the body. And first of all, doesn't sound like very much, but as you deepen into what really constitutes a body, it's everything. Because we're not looking at sinews and marrow, we're looking at the whole nervous intelligence system, which is based in the body, right? As you get clear about it, you can recognize that everything that touches your mind touches your body. Body lifts, sinks, tightens, loosens, jumps, sags, drifts. But it's the same system, the same nervous system running the whole thing. So one of the problems is we tend to dissociate the body from the mind, or think it's all in the mind. There are certain factors that are mental, attitude, intentionality. But we're creating a meeting place where the mind and body meet. So you can also recognize even particular attitudes have an effect on your body. So, you know, particular memories have an effect on your body. So, you know, sometimes I'm sitting in meditation and my mind goes into all the things I've got to do, and immediately I feel like going to sleep. Because I start to want to lie down and find something to hide under. You know, it's interesting, and I come back again and do it again. You know, find me a rock to crawl under. It does, you actually feel the energy just retracting like that. Sometimes people can't sleep because they're so wired up about the thoughts about tomorrow or the job. And they're just kind of charged up like that. Or how you can feel emotionally comforted just by somebody holding you or touching you in a comforting way. Feel yourself calmed and held by that. So the two are strongly interrelated. So just holding the frame of reference in the body, the overall sense of the structure of it, and then tuning into these somatic intelligence or the body's neurological patterning, every complicated words, because this is a rather lost science, so the words of it aren't common language anymore. You can notice things like rapid eye movement when that occurs. Is it associated with a calm, peaceful mind or not? I don't think so. Yeah. So just learning to hold your eyes steady. Or even the gaze of the eyes when it's tight, you know, the python eyes. looking at someone with python eyes, you know, it's just you, you know, back off. Soften, loosen up, will you, you know. So you can recognise these things, just even one eyeball, you can tell you what's going on. And then the mouth, you know, that's like uttering a disapproval. So notice you walk down the street and every time you get a slight judgment of somebody, you do this face size up. You can do those rapid judgments you do of people as you walk along the street. So like that, you actually can feel it in the face. You feel yourself going into judgment mode, because it's one of our favourite activities is judging. Judging other people, judging ourselves. Got a spare moment, do some judging. So these psychological habits seem very ingrained in us. So what you're saying is actually, you know, in your body, it's a place where you can get some leverage on it. Because if you can just sustain that steady, cool spacious, it's difficult. You may feel that judgment starting to occur, but then, you know, or that, whatever it is, you just come back to your frame of reference and, oh, you know, you've cut it off before it takes over. Now it's quite when you get the basic frame of reference, just deepening into it and having confidence in it. Having confidence in it. Because mostly we get flustered by what comes up. We get flustered, we get panic, and then we go into our reactivity. Because what comes up, sooner or later it comes up, pushes a button somewhere. And then once it pushes the button, tendency is to go into the reactive mode, which is the one that we are all programmed into. So you're really trying to change the programming from the sankhara that going to the reactive, hardening up, defense, hold, fix, change, you know, which separates me, creates a sense of me. Defending myself, yeah. Getting on top of something, yeah. Proving something, being right, you know, all that, this strong sense of me. The sankharas that do that go into something where that doesn't happen. Yeah. That's the possibility of freedom. So freedom is when we don't create the sense of me in the world. Why Buddha liberates people through not seeing any people and for not being somebody who does something, but just by maintaining that position, and then from that apparent stillness and spaciousness there is a response. But it's not the sharp reactive response that we've got used to, which is about me doing something, but it's a subtler. So first of all, you don't even notice it. Or it may be that your mind has got so kind of numbed through these violent responses, you can't pick it up. You have to sense, how am I moved by that? How am I affected by that? So the response will occur. Some sort of response is just... it's quite a quiet thing. Seemingly small, and suddenly everything changes. And just a small, you know, I think realizes just about to create a massive suffering. And you know, so it's that kind of shit. Seemingly quite small. Okay. So. Contact. So the Buddha says karma, contact is the source of karma. Contact is where karma arises from contact. Now there are different ways we should look at contact. Contact is the immediate something contacting a sense base, eyes, sound, touch, ears, so forth. But that's one kind of karma. But the contact that creates karma is what's called the heart contact or designation impression, which means how we are moved by it, how we label it, how it pushes a button, the impression it makes on us. So you can notice this contact experience, and you want to. The fundamental beginning of all this is just the pausing, and getting that one in. Yeah. And of course, this isn't what we do. I go to America, I get in the wrong side of the car, get in the driver's seat rather than the passenger seat, because they drive. America. America, you've got the light switches, you have to switch a switch up. In Britain, you would switch them down. Switch a light on. America, light goes up. Britain, light goes down. Darkness goes down in Britain. Light goes up in America. You're switching lights off. You want to switch them on. So you get that kind of, contact impression. Just wait a minute. And it covers the most basic things. And you learn a lot, and particularly as it goes deeper. So living a monastic life. The contact of hunger, depression, because you have this daily fast from noon until the next day. So you get these impressions of, come on, I'm hungry. Starving. It's just take the set of feeling and then the perception. Feeling is the immediate tingle of pleasure and pain. The perception is the kind of the way we interpret that. So you get tingling sensations, seemingly abdominally connecting things. Must be hungry. Not always true, actually. Then you get the comes out of that. Wow, I could eat. So then you go in and you just there's the food and blitz onto the food. Wow, beached whale. Because you didn't get an accurate reading, but it wasn't able to translate into actually how much food is necessary. So the perception is an approximation always. It gives you the felt sense, need food, but it's not very accurate. It's absolutely not accurate. It's 5% accurate, 10% accurate. It is not accurate. And yet that's what we act upon. Your first immediate thing is to act upon the perceptions. That's desirable. I need all of it now. You never get an impulse that says, oh, I wouldn't mind some of that sometime. Always, I need all of it now. I can't stand this for a minute. You can, actually. But perceptions don't go into that subtle form of language. They just push triggers. So we've got to check the first impulse is the one check. Not suppress, not repress, not judge, not blame, not deny, not worry about, but just check. And then what happens is that then that feeling and the perception will tend to rise up, and then if you check them, there's a bit of a turmoil. Because something that's flowing, rushing down your nerve endings, is suddenly held in check. And there's a bit of what's going on here? Now that the rush of energy, the rush of feeling and desire, or aversion, or whatever it is, the rush of intentionality, definitely affects your bodily sense. You're motivated, you're activated, you're charged up. You're on fire with something, you're lit up with something. You can't stand it, you're retracting from it, you're agitated, and you feel it in your body. Then when you deliberately stop it, things start to go a little bit crazy, turmoil. You pause. This is where you've got to come back to your fundamental body reference, like, wait a minute, spine, sitting, and let the feeling rush through you, and it's rather like a rush of water. like a rush of a wave, it comes rushing through, a lot of white water, and then you hold the space and it moves through. Ah. And as it moves through, then is when you can get the true response. When it's moved through, you clear, or clearer, the froth, the smoke has gone down, the froth has passed away, and now, okay, I need to eat something. Not really, that would be, you know, this kind of thing. But it's particularly the meeting place has to be adequate to first of all feel something you can go to pretty quick, hold the space, it's not super refined, it's not, you know, remote, it's fairly clear, clearly definable, clearly acknowledgeable, it can be deeply felt. It's sustained not through tremendous willpower, but through a certain calm, spacious resolve, like, yeah, here I am, I can be with that. You build up that meeting place with qualities of goodwill, confidence, patience, all these things. So that meeting place becomes truly firmly founded and you feel comfortable there. Because when that wave comes through, when the rush of it comes through, it knocks that meeting place around. It's like this is when the tsunami hits. And as it, I can't stay here. we go into our reactive mode. Because feeling stirs everything up. As it stirs everything up, the perceptions come, oh, I can't bear this, oh no, oh yes, oh no, I've got to have this, I can't do that, yes, yes, no, terrible, what am I supposed to do here? These perceptions, these impressions come up, and they generate more feelings, more mental feelings. So the whole thing just becomes froth and foam, and we lose the meeting place, we lose the mooring place. And then the end is going to reactivity, we then act upon that, and so on. That's how it goes. The more often we do that, the more we almost learn or get trained or entrained into when that certain amount of that froth comes, you just go with it. Yeah. And that's not good news. Really. Because then you're always eventually going to be captured by that wave. You think, I'll just go with this one and it'll be all right. Yeah, it'll be alright, but then you've started a habit, the next one comes in, you'll follow that one. Yeah. But always in challenging it, in meeting it, there is a testing. When it feels like you don't feel comfortable, you don't feel secure, you don't feel happy, don't think you can manage it, you feel, ill at ease, you feel messy, you feel all this kind of, you're disoriented in many ways. Yeah, meet it. And so your meeting place has to be big enough to meet that. So like a hall, a vast hall that can encompass all that can arise within it. That's what you build up over time in meditation. To meet the feeling, to meet the perception that arises. But it is also a matter of time. It does get stronger in time. Both the sense of the meeting hall itself becomes more and more deeply founded. The more every one of these, it gets firmer the more these waves hit it, actually, because they're the ones that mean you have to go deeper. You take a deeper stance. As the next one comes, if you treat it wisely, every one of these is strengthening you. Every time one is hit, it can strengthen you, and you get more spacious. Yeah. So certainly, in my own practice and life, then fortunately I didn't have too many ideals about monastic life. But I noticed that the ones who didn't last very long, because they thought it was about tranquility, peaceful, goodwill to all humans. Experiencing that all the time. Which, you know, it, after a while you're getting closer to it, but at first it's not that way at all. You can't just do that, you know. But through meeting one's ill will, one's frustrations, one's panic, one's endless confusion, then meeting it, stabilizing gradually, you're able to not get caught in it, and then these ties don't arise. And not only do they pass, but in the long run, the beauty of it is they don't actually have to arise anymore. They didn't arise really through just a blocking system, but through deepening your foundations and not following those trends of panic, of agitation, of self-judgment. And somehow or another, the beauty of it is that after a while, actually it doesn't happen anymore. Bits of it don't happen anymore. You know, I haven't actually criticized myself for the last while, you know, that's interesting. I normally have a pretty accurate critique on everything I do. It seems to stop. How did I do that? Well, you didn't do it. You know, somehow that tie, because it couldn't pull you anymore, got fed up with coming. So these things seem to have a process of a lifespan by themselves. So if you don't keep following them, every time you follow it, you give it a little more lifespan, a little more energy. Every time you believe in it, you give it a little more energy, so it lasts longer. If you're just holding your space, holding your steadiness, then you don't believe in it, it's like it starts to fade out. That's the process. So we're always at this point. The crux of the practice is establishing your meeting place and then meeting what arises. There's a turbulence that occurs as you meet significant stuff of your suffering, of your nervousness, of your stress, of your anxiety, of your guilt, regret, whatever it is. And that's where you hold your ground. You don't have to defend yourself against that. You don't have to go into a tribunal and prove who's right and who's wrong. You don't have to be a commando and battle away at it. You just hold your space, let it move through. That's how you see these conditions as transient and not self. That realization occurs. And behind that comes the response. As the wave passes, then the response. This is where one of the responses is realization. Oh, this is so bad. You know, that's a shift. Response might be something like forgiving. Response might be something like really a particular habit pattern. You see it as unnecessary and you let go of it, or there's a letting go of it. I always say you let go of it, but you don't. There's a letting go of it, there's a forgiving, there's a shifting. There's not self doing that, it just happens. People. You know, I mean, everyone has people who irritate, annoy, frustrated with. And so, you know, a certain amount of my practice is just about deliberately bringing these people to mind and hold, you know, that perception of them, and then passing different perceptions. This person is also of the nature to pass away, to die. They're also loved by other people. They love other people. They have their worries, their pain, they have sickness and death. Just keep washing different perceptions through it. So you're just starting to loosen up that fixation on this person being the tyrant that they, you know, that they are to you, or whatever they are to you, the annoying tyrant. And it works. It definitely works somehow. And somebody who was having a lot of problems with, over years, problems with this person, just the other week, saw this person, and I just felt this tremendous sense of love. Where did that come from? You know, and it wasn't forced, it wasn't me trying to be nice, it just, I've seen this person so many times in my mind. It was like, when everything else is finished, the only thing left is love. And it's the fundamental thing, you know, it's the fundamental quality of that occurs between us. The rest of the stuff is the confusion that gets laid upon it. Why, you know, we hurt each other, we frustrate each other, we disappointed, we disagreed. And that clears. It's just a love, whatever that means to you. To me, it means a kind of shining resonance of sympathy, of seeing and being seen at the same time, with no differentiation, just enjoyment, appreciation. I don't know who you are, but just that sense of like a shining quality to it, mutuality, something like that. Well, where did that one come from? Well, you know, where the next? So we have our people we find it irritating, who we feel frightened of. Notice the feeling frightened, intimidated. Hope he doesn't see me doing this. Okay, just hold that one. You know, here I am being seen as an idiot, being seen as furtive, greedy, by the intimidating person. Oops. Holding that. Softening. Widening. Okay. Perception. Feeling. Let it pass. So you don't see people as intimidating, right? You don't make them that way. So this is really, you know, these contact impressions, these little icons that establish the fear icon, the feeling lessened by, the aversion, the irritation, the feeling responsible. That's another one. So, I'm the abbot of a monastery, so I'm responsible. I've got the responsible icon. Every, you know, the letters come, the brown manila envelopes come to the abbot. And you know, when you see a brown manila envelope, there's not going to be a lot of fun in that. And then, you know, one is supposed to make it work. Everybody's happy. Well, of course, this is a total wind up. Make it, you know, everybody happy. So you get that, trying to make it work, trying to fix things, and then people will be disruptive, get on their case quick, sort them out. Somebody's not doing the right thing, check them out. Somebody's misbehaving, check it out. This, that and the other. So you get to feel that, like you're in a situation where you always got to be making, you know, everybody following what you're doing, checking things out, and everything's really straight. Like that. Yeah. I mean, I don't really want to live like this. I'm happy to respond. Happy to respond from a genuine place, but I don't want to be a person who's controlling everything. Yeah. You know? I don't want to be a person who's in charge and controlling and dominating everything. So you've got to do what I say. You know, who wants to be that? Just feel the tightness in that. Mm. Yeah? And the latent aggression in it. You have to do to back it up. And the worry that somewhere somebody might be doing something behind my back. snoop around, you know. And then worry about the future, what might happen. Gee, you know, do you want to live like that? So, well, I don't know, but what I do know is I don't want to be that. So I'll start with that. Actually, I don't really mind if people, why should it bother me if people do or don't? It's got to do with me, you know, I say what needs to be said. So it's a sort of shift, and just always that, once I start to do that, then you can recognise in the people who are, you know, saying that situation somebody's not doing what I wanted them to do, or it's on the duty list they're supposed to do, then instead of personifying them as evil being, miscreant, whatever, you know, defective criminal, who's there just purely to irritate me. It seems a person like me who's forgotten what day of the week it is, that's why I didn't turn up. You say, hey, who's that? Oh, okay, yeah, right. Oh, yeah. End the story. You know, some people just lose information. I had really interesting for one day, and I think it might have been the autumn, I think, you know, even autumn. And so went up, got to the morning chanting, sat there, and we take it in turns to do the morning chanting. So I sat there for the morning chanting. Monks were already, everybody else was already there when I got there, so I sat down waiting for the morning chanting happen. Nobody's chanting. Nobody's talking. What's going on here? There's a no chanting movement that's taken over. Quite a while, wondering why nobody's chanting, receiving all these ideas of why people weren't doing it. You know, and then what I was going to say to people, how important it was to do with chanting, and you can't stand this kind of thing anymore. People aren't going to chant, what are you doing here? This is amongst you, this is chant, so forth. Somebody rings a bell, and then they do the final piece of the chanting, and then oh, why it's happened that way is because I came in an hour late. If I hadn't put my clock back, they'd already done the chanting. We chant and we meditate, and at the end of it we chant again. They've already done it. And they're all politely waiting for me. And I turned rock in an hour late. And I could create this whole scenario of indignation and over something that never happened. You know? Just out of the control assumption, right, wrong, judgment, responsibility, you know, what it does to you. That cripples your relationship. It cripples yourself. You say, okay, does this mean just, no. It doesn't mean I can dismantle that icon, that impression, that felt sense, that self, stop being that one, and just start being a human being? Say, hey, what's happening? How are you doing? You know, are we doing, you know, this is on the page, isn't it? What are we up to? You know, just like be human. And treat other people as if they're human. Adults, you know. With their forgetfulness and, you know, ups and downs of it all. Be realistic about it. And you sort of see just what these fixed positions and perceptions do to you. Do to you. And you can reel off a list of them, can't you? You can based upon, you know, the obvious ones are positions in your work or senior, junior, or higher, lower, or people you see as outside your group, strange people, strange looking people, odd people, or particular people you're living with, you know, who manifest, who become people in your mind. It's the person who doesn't listen to me, or the person who's always that. Yeah. But what you really want to know is not your person, you want to know, am I starting to create suffering or not? I think I'm creating some suffering here. You know, or something's creating suffering and you feel it building up. pressure, the forms, the demonic forms it creates, the misperceptions it creates, the demonization it creates of yourself and others, the twists it creates, distortions. Stop. This is pause, definitely pause on this one. Come back to the meeting place. Meet the fear, meet the uncertainty, meet the disorientation, meet that fluttering, hold it, rest in it, breathing in, breathing out, let the wave move through. So that's what you do, being blamed, being criticized. Being left out. Meet that. Feels like this. It happens to everybody. It's not a personal thing, it happens to everybody. Meet that. Fame, praise, blame, accusation, being wrongly judged. These are the standard experiences which we get all our self stuff start getting uppity about. And meet it. This is exactly the essence of the Four Noble Truths. Suffering and the cessation. The pivot around really getting to that place where the origin of suffering. It's not an analytical, intellectual understanding. Suffering is caused by holding on. Suffering is caused by craving. No, that's nice and clear on paper. When it's happening, it's not like that. Suffering is just forming into a person. That's what it is, isn't it? So you can't stop that happening, you can stop it forming into a person, either in here or out there, and then it passes through. Then you get response, letting go, forgiveness, clarity, reorientation of what you're about, readjustment of your attitudes and aims, the response. And then you can live that response. That's really giving you the line, the guideline on how to live your life. Okay, so let's have some time for a little practice. The meeting place, embodied awareness, paying attention, whole form, settle, finding out places that are activated, the upper chest, the solar plexus, face. If we can gently hold those in a wider frame of reference, let the energy level, drain into the whole form so it becomes less differentiated. Just the body, just this is what's called knowing the body, just the extent of knowing there is a body. Anything stopping us doing that? So I hope you can be here tomorrow. But meanwhile, just some things to help perhaps maintain the continuity. Just some very simple things to do. You know. Just learn to, when you're walking, try to walk at your own speed, if you're comfortable, rather than the speed that's pushing you along. Be prepared to miss the tube train and wait 5 minutes for the next one. Will it kill me? No. Build in pauses. So when you, you know, any really, like build in pauses on deliberate times, like okay, you get home, get back. Stop, just pause 20 seconds before you go into activity. You know, put your bag down or whatever and just pause, try and pause completely. If there's somebody coming to meet you, tell them what you're doing. And you just find it, or you don't, just wait outside the door and pause. And pausing is like just a kind of going into complete neutral space, and when you pause, just go into like, how's, where am I? You know, not where am I on the map, but where am I in my body? What's happening in your body right now? What's happening in my body right now? It doesn't. It's just that, turning it that way. Anything rising up? Anything? You know, present moment. Where am I in the body? How am I? If you get time for that. Just that act of switching attention from external and activities to such holistic and reflective. So how am I with this things happening here? You know, opening the door, or what am I expecting on the other side of the door? You know, what am I about to go into? What am I already probing myself up for, to be, you know, can we go again? We just pause on that one. So that opening the door really is just like, oh, what's in here? You know? So try to give these moments when you just really check the whole of the world system, stop the world at that moment, and then open into it, and what's actually here right now. Can I meet that? And then it's moment at a time. Really is just moment at a time. If you can, see if you can almost make that a little daily cultivation of 10 to 20 seconds. 10 seconds is reasonable, I think. So, you know, you finish your breakfast just before you clear away. Doesn't have to be particularly significant moments. Just any old time will do. You know, getting it out the door, getting into your car or whatever. And so you know how to do that. You know there is that shift that you can do at any time. Doesn't have to be a crisis, which is the normal way in which you just keep in touch with your holistic awareness rather than your functional awareness, your functional attention, your functional programs, just holistic awareness of just how am I, where am I, what's important now. And feel the energy of it, feel what's happening. And it may just help you be curious as you go into that pause, be curious. What will come out of it, the other side? Curious. It doesn't have to be anything. It's curious as to what feels like, what feels natural. Don't think about it. See what arises out of that space. Okay. So have a reflective evening, and see you tomorrow, I hope.
Thank you very much for today. Thank you. And I know that most of us are expecting to be here again tomorrow. But if by any chance you're not able to do that, may I remind you of the tradition of Dana, whereby the lay community maintains the monastic community and our other teachers in return for the teaching they give us. There is a Dana box, which as many of you will know, brightly coloured in the main hall, so please do use that. And as a reciprocal piece of generosity, an extra reciprocal piece of generosity, as Ajahn Sujita mentioned, there are a lot of books which Bridget can be brought up from Kipthurst, which are there for free distribution, which you might wish to take either this evening or tomorrow evening. And those are there printed out of people's generosity, so please take it from in that spirit. And the hall will be locked, but we advise against leaving valuables here, but we don't need to do anything in that time.
Is it worth saying we've got some food left over, but we could do with some more tomorrow for lunch? Thank you.